You're not supposed to admit that out loud online.
You got the homemade chop still here to start.
Okay.
Good evening. Wish I knew.
I was mopping Steve's floor the other day, and like while I'm mopping, he's like, "Do you know what Jeff's talking about?" No. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Like, what's he trying to like? Like, how do you
explain? Sounds like he's onto something.
You're like, I'm like, how do I explain like while I'm mopping? What I don't know.
Yeah. Good to have refreshing feedback. What the fuck are you talking about?
No, that's honest.
Yeah. Whew. Don't ask me. You could say that one thing of a million that makes this so distinctively irrational is that our habit for accumulating and registering, call it truth or, you know, an orientation to being, is through you know, concept and language and education and behavioral functionality, if we're so lucky. And none of those can meaningfully apply to the textural nature of being. So we try to apprehend call it reality, for lack of a better word, through the familiar ways in which we apprehend, which is through comparison and discernment and
data hoarding.
idea hoarding.
Yeah. Data hoarding.
Oh, data hoarding. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And it's that that reflex, you know, conditioned, taught, cultivated reflex of apprehension, which is a form of grasping and a form of you know, metaphoric assignment. In order to, you know, understand something and kind of keep it in your back pocket, you know, it's through metaphoric assignment. And metaphoric assignment is not just language or thought or you know, subtle forms of symbology. Metaphoric assignment also includes motor skills. You know, applying yourself to a task like taking out the garbage needs motor skills, and becoming a gifted pianist requires motor skills, or solving the accounting problems of your clients to keep them from going to jail, you know, requires a certain kind of skill set. So these are the skill sets that we have, let's say, cultivated and deployed through our lifetime. And naturally, we would apply these same functionalities to the question of, I'll call it, you know, liberation or self-realization. And they fail. And we don't notice that they fail because we're so well adapted to asserting them that we'll just keep trying and keep trying and keep trying to assert the conditioning of our acquiring apparatus to make something as squishy as self-realization our own. And it doesn't reply, it doesn't respond to conditioned acquisition strategies. Because it's not, you know, knowledge related. It's not, you know, it's not a motor skill. It speaks, of course. Otherwise, it would be a non-conversation. You'd never, you know, you wouldn't have a Ramakrishna or, you know, a Jesus or something if it didn't speak. So it speaks. But the, you could say part of the question or part of the yoga is, what language is it speaking in? How do I acquaint myself with the subtle language or symbology that reality is actually speaking in, so that I can, you know, interface, have a conversation with experiencing? And it takes, you could say, a while, you know, 5 minutes to 500 lifetimes, somewhere in between there, to go, oh, yeah, this is actually speaking, but it's not speaking in the language sets that I'm familiar with. So I have to put down all of my familiar ways of acquiring and really kick the fuck back to hear a whole different tonality of, call it symbology, that escapes metaphoric assignment. In order to have successful metaphoric assignment, you have to have the appearance of psychological time, because you're acquiring actuality through, right, a metaphoric assignment to then put it on the back shelf of your consciousness and say, that's mine. But so-called reality doesn't lend itself to acquisition. Why is that? Well, because it's not really anything at all, and yet it's ongoingly so. So even the reflex of attempting even the most subtle form of acquisition or metaphoric assignment to say, oh yeah, I get reality and I can put it on my consciousness shelf and show it to any of my friends that come visit me. But it won't do it. And so we remain curiously frustrated, and I would say unconsciously so, because we haven't realized for really quite a long time that, if there were any, that reality is not going to lend itself to the habits, to acquisition habits. And no one has brought that to our attention. Now, the Buddha doesn't say, okay, fifth noble truth, this won't work. You know, there's no emphasis to remind us, or you could say educate us, that the habit of acquiring will not function when it comes to the liquidating nature of presence. Now you're, you know, once you start to get that, if you're lucky enough to get it, or interested enough to, you know, decipher that, that's a quandary, because you don't necessarily know how to apply yourself to the curious appetite one has for absolute freedom if you can't use your formerly successful acquisition skills. It's kind of funny. I mean, it's a great paradox. I mean, really, it's a thrilling paradox because, you know, if you look at all the things that you can look at, you know, Adyashanti and Byron Katie and on and on and on and da-da-da-da-da, you're going to see now that, let's say, I've brought this to your attention, but probably long before that, you'll start to see how what I'm suggesting is true in all of these communions. You can see the expression of a curious organic frustration in one trying, let's say the aspirant, trying to apprehend, metaphoricize, make, right, consciousness obey in these forums, because it won't. And the, you know, the teachers, the purveyors, well, perhaps deliberately, perhaps not deliberately, don't emphasize the point, because were they to, the dynamic and the chemistry of those meetings would change profoundly. You couldn't snooker tens of thousands of people into JYNs and four steps and turnarounds if you started out by saying, this is not apprehendable through the habit of your acquisition skills. And I don't really give a fuck what's happening in your life. And curiously, really neither do you, though you don't know what else to do with yourself, so you may as well care about what's happening in your life, because absent then, you have no idea what to do. And then solve all the things in your life that aren't going your way through mindfulness and mono diets and walkabouts and, you know, everything that you can purchase in the so-called liberating marketplace today. And all of those things, of course, will entertain you for sure. I mean, for a long time. Very entertaining. You might meet a soulmate. You might meet, you know, the codependent nightmare of your dreams, which turn out to be usually the same. You know, you might meet a dozen of them, of whatever gender you're interested in when you meet them at these communions. You know, you might have to shave your head, depending on who you run into, which for some of us is no big deal, and others of us, it's a big fucking deal.
Be a big deal for you.
Yeah. Yeah. What? Lose this mop? You're out of your mind. I will not submit to ego death, Andrew. I will not. I mean, Andrew Cohen was pretty fucked up, but he was pretty smart. He had everyone convinced that they had to make an outrageous level of commitment so that they could actually be free.
Yeah.
And that they could make that commitment, let's say, through his, you know, instruction. And no one had the balls to say, none of that's true. There's no commitment need be made. There is no freedom in the way you're speaking about it. And if you're the intermediary, I'm fucked. See ya. I'm totally fucked. But no one had the, you know, no one had the maturity at the time. I dare say most of them don't have it today. they just have the benefit of the story of having been bullied and wounded by, you know, a psychopathic, narcissistic, sociopathic so-called guru that had, you know, who knows, enough Shakti in his wallet to make people get a woo. And so, you know, once you go into the community model, what are you going to find but the repugnant amplification of human stupidity? You're not going to find liberation in the community model. You're not going to find liberation, dare I say, in even the guru model. You're not going to find it in a model. And for shit sure, it has nothing to do with ego life or ego death, since both of those are just absolutely absurd. You're not, one is not in sufficient possession of anything that could possibly interfere with your own realization. And so there's no way that there's really anything that you're in possession of that you should consider getting rid of. I mean, even bringing that up is like, I think we should leave the room now. This isn't going right. Now let's get out of here. Are you made of memory? Whether that's, you know, psychiatric memory or emotional memory or somatic memory? Are you made of self-reflection? How do you account for, all the things that may appear to be interfering with your so-called happiness? And it's not that difficult to see that while there are tremendous, formidable forces that lend themselves to our interpretation of being without insufficient, unhappy, insecure, frightened, worried about the future, lonely, you know, I can't launch. I just can't launch. I can't launch when it comes to career. I can't launch when it comes to my physical appearance. I can't launch when it comes to getting a job. I can't launch when it comes to keeping a job. You know, most groups that I go to try to find a little succor eventually throw me out. I'm really, you know, toast. I just can't launch. Byron Katie can't help me. You know, really don't know what to do. And anything that comes your way that sounds like or feels like a certain amount of relief, I would argue is not really serving you. Even though we crave anything that comes our way that looks like and feels like a certain kind of relief or the, you know, a cogent belief system or spiritual strategy. I mean, I got several decades under my belt, you know, doggedly pursuing spiritual strategies. And, you know, codependency relationships with interesting persons. That's all, you know, that's all I got. Hi. And nothing to show for it. Yeah, except for like a few, you know, war stories, which are fun for sure. But they get tired pretty fast. We, along the way, you know, made one or perhaps several, let's say, decisions when it comes to, you know, what life is or what culture is, what I am, you know, as the child of some people, as the brother of others, as the boyfriend of others, as the husband of one, as you know, a member of a society, as an employee. And I just don't know what to do with myself. You could say there's there's a certain wisdom in having an encounter with a kind of profound despair as concerns what to do about yourself, what to do with yourself. There's a wisdom there. Even though our reflex is, I will avoid that existential dilemma at pretty much all cost and find however many bars, bowling alleys, 12-step meetings, and meditation halls as I can not to feel that. And probably the bowling alley is the best place not to feel it. Just ask the dude.
You can drink and take your anger out on the ball.
God, it doesn't get any better than that. They should rename bowling. I shall not feel my pain. Alley.
The lyrics of the song. In the great bowling alley of your mind, I am your pinboy. I am your pinboy.
Nice. Well done.
I don't remember the others, but those really ring through.
Yeah? Well, that's catchy.
That's the Fugs.
Uh-huh.
Crystal liaison. Crystal liaison. Well, I've certainly contemplated that a lot, especially lately, because, you know, retirement will be coming up at some point. And
somewhere in the next 20 years.
Yeah. And so,
good to get a beat on it.
And even this, without that, I can spend my time, like you're saying, just getting busy, and I was always a project. I never run out of projects. It's work, you know. But, you know, I could, if I somehow had it within me, stop doing all that. And I could actually make a choice about, like, something that might be better than what I've been doing. I don't know.
But there's not likely anything better than it.
Yeah, but what would that be? Could I volunteer at the soup kitchen or?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
That's right.
But I mean, certainly what
my soup kitchen.
Yeah, that's right.
What I'm doing is not that
gratifying. I just created it right now. It's available. You're the first volunteer.
Oh, boy.
There you go. It's going to be lines all the way up to Regalsville.
Cook stuff.
For you, right?
Yeah.
And for Fred.
Yeah, well.
It's a shock, isn't it, to try to figure out what to do with an 8-hour day? With your spouse around,
or a 16-hour day,
16-hour day with your spouse around, pretty almost full time if she's also retired.
That's why I have a basement.
Yeah,
I have a big basement.
Yeah, I mean, how much can you say to your spouse in a day?
Yeah.
What?
Well, her,
hungry?
Her head's
Asian?
In a book or a TV. So.
Yeah. Okay. So she's figured out how to, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, busy work. I mean, that's what
tons
people do.
Photography. You can go visit your sons by surprise. Take them out to lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Yeah. Hi, Dad.
What are you doing here again?
What are you doing here again? Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I just kind of took the bus home and made a round trip. I, figured you want to go out to dinner, too. Yeah. I mean, how did Ramana Maharshi spend his time? What did he do in a day?
Walk around the mountain?
Yeah. What? Yeah.
Laps.
In that heat, southern India, Jesus, most of the year it's, if you're in the sun, it'll just flatten you.
Yeah.
You have to hide. Yeah. Was he reciting Sanskrit all the time? He probably said, anyone got a fresh diaper? How many hours in a day can you pet peacocks, you know, and nestle with cows and, you know, eat rice and, you know, what the fuck did he do? You know, walk around like pretty much anyone, probably, you know, planning and strategizing and keeping busy and stuff. Being Brahmin, you know.
That doesn't take enough of my day.
I see, it's just not enough. You know, I mean, being Brahmin's cool, but all day long? That's got to suck. You know, what, did Nirsaga Dada, like, you know, scream at people and move his hands around all day long? It's exhausting, even if no one was there. You know, I think he, you know, he would take walks with a few people in tow and not shout. I mean, Wayne Lickerman likes to go out for Vietnamese food, you know.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Feed the koi. So I don't think anyone's got, you know.
Yeah, I found myself wondering, like, what the fuck should I do now? And I'm like, I'll do nothing. I'm like, that's just like another position I've like taken up to do something. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I can't even do nothing. Like,
yeah, that's right. Just, yeah.
Any proclamation. Is
yeah, I'd like
that
to.
Move.
I'd like to be able to even do nothing in peace, and like, yeah. I can't.
So that's like, you know, just, you know, my go-to strategy. I'm like, shit.
Yeah. Right.
This is another place I can't hide.
Uh huh.
I feel like a fucking crazy person.
You would be right.
That's
correct.
Leave me alone.
Well, there's a certain, you know, call it insistence or insatiability that accompanies this, you know, the gift of life that, you know, I don't remember signing up for. You know? Or being reincarnated into, which would even be worse. Who would opt in again? Oh, there's so much more I need to learn.
Before, like, really bad, so yeah. I don't even want to think about.
Oh, there's so much
more. In order for you to find that, it must have been.
Oh, yeah, really.
Really bad.
I mean, the people that probably sell reincarnation contracts are the same fuckers that sell timeshares. They're really, really good at it.
And plots of space on the moon.
Plots of space.
It's always a different
thing. And trips to Mars with Elon Musk.
Yeah.
That sounds like a sweet deal. Going to Mars.
Yeah. Good luck.
Good luck. They crashed their little rover.
That's right. You're next. Well, you know, it's kind of fun. The let's say the primary adversary, which is, of course, yourself, which is, of course, occurring in your own, you know, experience. There's no primary adversary outside you. You are the primary adversary. And not by, you know, choice or belligerence, you know, or will. It's just, fuck. Oh, fuck, here this is. God, Jesus. And you find yourself, you know, inexorably, spontaneously, with no premeditation, constructing an idea on an ongoing basis of the so-called condition you're in, or the place you're in, or what you're going to do with yourself next, even if it turns out to be nothing. And it's just, this is unrelenting. That's why it's nice to go to sleep if you can. And, you know, just get a break from the pressure of yourself daydreaming and setting a course.
I'm having like horrific nightmares.
Uh-huh.
All the shit's just coming out in my dreams too.
Oh yeah. Sure.
I have this like deep-seated fear of like demonic possession in every freaking night, man.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a pretty decent hell realm right there.
Well,
you win.
The ayahuasca lingers, right? Like the drugs linger in some weird, the consciousness kind of.
Well,
lingers.
Sure. You know.
Multiple visitations.
When you, yeah,
well,
you know.
I'm afraid of things. I wake up and I feel like the veil is about to be torn down. And there's like a thousand spirits just waiting for me. I'm like, please, Mother, I must be help me.
Uh-huh.
I've always had like a fear of demons and shit like that. I watched too many movies when I was little. This one where this time. You know, like the earth opens up and all these demons come out and like they're catching all the kids and
oh, yeah.
The shit out of me. I was like 5 years
old. Should have been monitoring your TV.
That's right. Yeah. Someone should have been monitoring, yeah.
Yeah, you're watching it by yourself and you're like, I shouldn't have watched that. I made a mistake.
I made a mistake.
You do it again.
No going back now. Yeah. Even like peanut butter and jelly in a glass of Ovaltine is not going to fix that shit.
Yeah.
It's too late.
Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
Why were there so many of those?
Well, you know, Buddha's so-called story was, you know, the same. Being assailed by, you know, everything and anything that his dear opponent Mara could throw at him to unseat him from his, you know, goal or destination. To distort one's asan, one's seat, with, you know, fear and lust and greed and, you know, whatever, omniscience, immortality, you know. It either seduces you with, you know, supernatural accomplishments or with the most, you know, painful ripping apart, you know, or possession that you could imagine. Yeah. Yeah. Why not? And it's not like you're being singled out, you know. Here's a charming metaphor. You know, consciousness is kind of interested to see what it's made of because it's not quite sure. So, you know, you're the battleground in a self-discovery process that really has nothing to do with you. It's, you could say it's just felt, right? More or less where you are.
You know, what I don't quite understand of what you're describing, and that, you know, these, well, I'll call them visitations, I don't know, but is the fear based on the fact, is the fear based on the idea that you will then lose control and feel like there is no you anymore, you're just an incorporation of this demonic possession?
That would be the easy way out.
Or is the fear that you are forever in this prison, not being able to let, I mean, or I don't want to put, oh, I've already put words in your mouth. I mean, what is this fear? Can you be more descriptive?
It's just an experience that I don't want to happen. Like, I mean, you know, it's just.
Oh, okay. But well, it's,
I guess
it's true.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's just, huh. I, you know. Have you ever had a sleep paralysis?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Very briefly. Yeah. Well, a couple times.
Maybe. I think it's just, I've, you know, seen that like experience can be really extreme. So I just think that like this could go so effing wrong that like there's, you know, it would just be the worst possible thing. And I think this specific issue is such a pressure point, so to speak, in the myriad, you know, things flung by, because, like, you know, the response has been recently, like, you know, just open up to experience and let things brew, but then it's like, let me just like, open up, let the demons in, like what, this doesn't really seem to make any sense, so this is why I guess there's some, I don't know, something, like, being worked out, you know, in me, and I don't know what it is, and, but it's,
Yeah. Well, look at the curious way that you know, a sense of
things being worked out.
Well, identity.
Yeah.
One's corporeal nature as, you know, a matrix of identity makes it appear in so many subtle ways, in implies all the ways that we can be harmed. And, you know, possession by, you know, masters of sleep paralysis can't be fun. Right? No way. Yeah. Yeah, what can you say? I mean, you know.
I think that's part of, like, the trick is that, like, as things have changed for me, it's like there is still this change going on. It's just like, oh, I'll let everything be, but then, like, it seems to be a change in my personality and all these other things, too. So it's like, haha, like, look at this adventure you're going. I'm like, yeah, look at this adventure. And it's just like,
yeah,
another, like, the ultimate, like, oh, this is the final. And it's just like another fucking
no,
thing.
Yeah, it's just another episode of Davy and Goliath.
Yeah.
And you're Goliath.
But see, David or baby? I can hear you.
The animated claymation pair.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. They were a Christian partnership. Davy was a young boy with, you know, a kind of a claymation face, and Goliath was his dog.
Yeah.
Davy, let's be Christian today. Okay, Goliath. Yeah. That was a great one. Gumby and Pokey were kind of like, you know, similar to Davy and Goliath without the, you know, the Christian overlay. They were just kind of like adventurers. A triangular fellow and a pony. angular fellow and his pony.
Makes a lot of sense.
It does. Really does. Makes a lot of sense.
I think what it is, too, is that, like, you know, there's this thought that, like, oh, if your, like, identity goes away, then, like, you know, no demon can possess you. But I guess that, too, like, there still could be that experience, so it's not like there is really any final resting place where you're this, you know, untouched thing. It's just like another, I don't know, story going, doing its thing, keeping itself alive.
It seems like everything, though, is an overlay, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You know, everything's an overlay.
Taking different ones, yeah.
But, I mean, you know, demons or, you know, got to go to work today, whatever it is.
That sounds like demons. I thought you were going to say something else. I mean, that's just demons again.
You know, there's raw identity under that. I don't know how raw it is, but, you know, maybe it's just a function of my neural network or something, but, you know, the sense of who I am.
Yeah.
Do so.
No, you're like the scarecrow.
Like, just
you don't have a brain.
I mean, I think that maybe I'm only getting the sense of individuation because of all this stuff here, you know, like the neural network, as I was saying, and all the other stuff that goes with it. Were it not for that, there wouldn't be this identification, you know. That'd be the freeing ultimate experience, and I guess that's, you know,
maybe
a death type of thing. A smart bottle in front of me.
See how it goes.
It's not, whatever it is, and it isn't anything, sure is not causal. You know, not to suggest you're without a brain or that, you know, the neural network is a myth, but the neural network is kind of a myth, though they can, those people that might be interested in opening your skull, with or without your permission, could find your brain. Yeah, but to think that the brain or the neural net is responsible for, you know, the way in which, let's say, manifest consciousness is expressing itself, might be a little, you know, myopic.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's I mean, when you get into this, as soon as duality strikes, and it seems to me you could say it strikes as soon as you're created, you know, or whatever, as soon as you're, you blossom, you know, all of a sudden there's all these forces, there's all this subject object.
But the primary force is there, if I, you know, may. The primary force is there.
Yeah.
Before, or even after, we could say the dawn of duality has occurred.
Yeah.
I mean, duality.
In that realm.
Duality, you could say, is a response to the irrefutability or primacy of these forces being filtered through, right, assignment, yeah. Language and metaphor, yeah. Objects.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, so
yeah.
The blossoming of duality is an artifact of a primacy, which in and of its own nature is not so split.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the yoga of direct encounter, regardless of the school, is just that, is to solicit one's attention to take notice of the primacy without sans or prior to, right, representation, prior to symbology. And here we are all the time. This is the primacy prior to or without sans symbology. And curiously, the symbology, the movement of symbology, which is the movement of psychological time and measure and comparison and acquisition, has no delay. The primacy comes with, the symbology comes with. And yet, though the symbology doesn't necessarily quit, One can become, let's say, profoundly confident in the primacy and not be lassoed or looped around by the symbology. Yeah,
language gets weird when you get into that.
Yeah, of course.
All of a sudden, then you're talking about one thing, but it's understood to be another thing. You know, personal pronouns.
Yeah. That's kind of where we were going earlier on, yes. Which was to point out that the habit and inertia of acquisition skills that rely on symbology won't work when it comes to the
right.
Apprehension of primacy.
It's like you turn the symbology in on itself. somehow.
Sounds like being chased by demons that want to be, that may, you know, be interested in possessing you. It's like the symbology is turned in on itself. Yeah, it can get really gnarly. But that's fantastic, really. You know, the symbology is, I mean, you know, worthy of worship, worthy of devotion, a lifetime of devotion. You know. Because it's fantastic to turn it, to turn the presence of symbology that accompanies primacy, which has no quarrel with anything, into the imagination of an ego that you'd be better off without, is a bad idea. It's not a good idea. Because you may notice as you go down that path, even if you're an ardent, let's say, purveyor of, you know, workbooks like A Course in Miracles, that you cannot escape one's addiction to symbology, one's addiction to the implication of symbology, as concerns self-identity. So no workbook is going to be advantageous. Because you'll just keep, the ruse continues with no end in sight to, you know, ever subtle realms of identification with symbology as self, and or attempts to remedy that which is, you know, appearing in some kind of uncomfortable way for the likes of me. I mean, it's got you for the long haul. It's happy. It is happy to be, you know, at your funeral. You know? Dance on your headstone. Took this motherfucker all the way to the grave. Right?
Yeah, you pray for peace, that's what you do.
Yeah, that's right. Now, you know, the curious thing is that the insistent and formidable nature of symbology, converting your otherwise blissful experience into the shithole of yourself, that you could say that freedom is always at hand. The primacy is always at hand. Quarreling with symbology is so consuming that we would rather do that than, you know, let's say, give our attention to the irrational language of the primacy. We're very, you know, easily, right, distracted, easily embodied, easily, you know, expressed in space-time as a, you know, meat puppet with pretty much insatiable impulses.
Pretty much.
Yeah, like totally. How about totally, asshole? Yeah, totally's cool. Now you could say it's interesting to, may I use the metaphor, boil down all of the fanfare, panorama of symbology so that we can, oh God, lighten up on, right, quarreling with it or making it right or promoting it or ourselves or, you know, being afraid of a thing or being sure of a thing or anything at all, right? We have to be, in a sense, kind of willing, can I say, geometrically or all at once, to put down the, right, the entirety of symbology. Not so easy. Because in an instant, we'll think of, you know, a thousand ways that we're conditioned, meaning that something like liberation, if there were any, is too far away. And too many sacrifices that I'm incapable of making need to be made for the dawning of that realization to occur. And we do so, you know, not necessarily based on content. We do so just by becoming interested in symbology right now. It's not like you actually, anything's actually happened to you that could possibly interfere with your presently appearing realization. You don't have a belief or a superstition that could interfere with it. Nothing you did morally, unethically, ethically, this lifetime or others, could possibly interfere with this primacy. Cannot interfere or obscure this primacy. So what interferes or obscures the primacy? Well, your present interest in symbology. Nothing other than one's present interest in symbology can appear to obscure the primacy. It doesn't actually obscure the primacy, but we might as well take up belief in something.
Is that like meditating on a steak?
like a vampire steak or
a steak
or a
no when you eat.
Oh yeah, like Outback.
Yeah. And meditating on the picture, like expect to get, you know, satisfied.
Well, for sure it includes that, but keep going. You know, you and I will age quickly and go hungry as we're coming up with one metaphor after another that, right, exposes what symbology is capable of.
Which is not felt sense. Felt sense is immediate. Right? It's not representing something that's something else that you're putting in your backpack. Right? It's just...
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. The metaphor of felt sense as contrasted with being inebriated with symbology can be used as a gateway drug. But even in the sharing of those concepts, we're in symbology.
Right. The yeah. word felt from the word sense.
Everything.
And I mean, processing of those words.
Yeah. See?
Interpretation.
It's like, right. You know, it's aha. Just, you know, it's a faucet. On. Always on. Always on. Is the, you know, the presentation... and the imbibing of symbology that's relied upon to suggest that you are in a condition now, or that you've been in one up to now, or that you're likely to find one that's pleasant or unpleasant a moment from now. And, you know, by so-called habit or default, that's where, I don't know what to call it, mind goes. That's where identity goes. It's so infatuated and in love with the stimulating nature, the vital nature of the arising of symbology that we figure, may as well. I can't seem to get a hook or handle on something other than that. So, you know, help me out. Right? I mean, you know, I don't know. What was Ramana up to? He was like, so tired of petting these goddamn cows and peacocks and shit, but look at all these motherfuckers. They expect me to do it, so wish I could get out of here. Go bowling. You don't really know. But you get all this clever language, of course, you know. Uppercase self and poems to Arunachala and, you know, the absolute and right. I mean, you're just inundated with the poetry of the saints and the realizers suggesting what? And all you get is, you know, highbrow, right? Advaita symbology. I mean, Peter Brown's good at it too. You get a whole bunch of symbology, you know, little puzzles and, you know, odd suggestions about the nature of reality, or trying to figure out what noticing is, or, you know, a snake eating its tail, and, you know, what? Well, Peter, is noticing like this? Well, sure. Well, is it like this? Well, sure. Well, is it like this? Yeah, maybe. Well, sure. But, you know, again, it's the present, right, perturbation, let's say, or fascination with the unrelenting nature of symbology, to place yourself in a relationship with something, with anything. Like, how's my noticing? Pretty good. Pat, you know. What? Oh, fuck.
And it'll become an event in the Olympics.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, it is an event. That thing with the brushes and the, the brushing. Curling. Curling. Yeah. That's like a form of noticing. It's just like high speed, right?
Should we invite them to come speak to us?
Yeah, they should. What are you guys actually doing in that event?
Olympic winner. See if they'll come. Mm.
It was your meeting. Sounds good. Consciousness, if there were any, just ongoingly makes it appear as if you're on a journey, that you're streaming, that you're, you know, moving in time. Even if you're still in place, you're, right? The power of rumination, the power of the primacy shining in your face makes it look like you're moving, like you're traveling, you know, through experience. Traveling through experience.
And if you divest in all senses, then there's nothing.
I don't know. We'll have to ask the people that have divested themselves of all senses.
Oh, I've fallen out of this once in a while. Be quiet.
Yeah.
The opposite of sensation. Like nothing.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. I mean,
no pulls, no pushes.
Well, even the isolation tank, you know, pioneers, they were not successful in zeroing out experience, even though they were, let's say, really good at neutralizing the right senses by being in a body temperature saline solution, floating with their eyes and ears covered to blot out external stimulus. They found themselves in the madness of their own minds. It was hardly, you know, zero.
That's right. They couldn't take the batteries out.
No. And, you know, then the good ones took ketamine.
What's that?
Horse tranquilizer.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if I'm going to be in the madness of my own mind, I might as well just amp the fucker up. See what's possible in here.
Yeah, they play the Anechoic Chamber. There's like a really good one, I think, some university, maybe in Israel. And it's like negative, like 75 decibels. And apparently, if you go in there for more than 45 minutes, you begin to hallucinate and go crazy.
Yeah. Is that all it takes?
There's one in Happer. I think Pat Snyder or somebody had it. And they used to hold tours. I tried to get in, but they said they don't hold tours anymore.
No, because there's a pile of bodies in there. They can't fit anybody else in.
They use it for, they did some testing down there, I forget.
So why would the average person go insane in a negative 75 decibel?
Because your brain, like, it needs to process something. If there's nothing to process, it just starts making its own shit.
Yeah, it just starts making its own shit. Yeah. And that shit is probably
not good.
Strangely irrational.
Yeah.
right?
And just as real as anything else.
And then it's felt or perceived as being as real or as anything else, and this is not where I want to be right now. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I don't really understand what negative 75 decibel is, but, I mean, certainly you would still be able to hear, like, your heart.
Yeah, you hear your heartbeat, yeah. Circulation. Like, those things like that, they come.
Well, that's frightening, too. Your whole body volume goes up,
that,
and you're
that's
like...
That's one thing that would freak me out.
Well, so, yeah. Yeah.
Some is you use your sound, too, to, like, balance yourself, so you can't, like, keep yourself steady. I guess you're sitting in a chair or something, maybe, but it's still, like, just very disorienting on more than one level.
Wow.
Sounds fun, though, right? Oh, it's like 45 minutes. Like, what do I win if I make it longer?
Yeah.
What about the hearing impaired or the totally deaf more to the point?
I don't know. I think it's different if you don't have that sense, because your brain might not be inclined to input data into something that's like, you know, a chute that isn't there, you know?
Yeah. Chutes and ladders. Well, I don't think it's unreasonable to suggest that as, you know, this style of yoga for sure includes building up a certain musculature to endure the inevitable presentation of some really irrational material.
Yeah, I feel like the volume gets slowly turned up.
Uh-huh. Hitting the 45-minute mark.
I think so. Without having to be, you know, in the physical chamber, let's call it repeating relationship with primacy is going to more or less act in the same way that the organizing habits that one is accustomed to, mostly sub or unconsciously, lose their grip, let's say.
Mm-hmm. I mean, would it be much different than deep sleep? It's just that you know, if you could chill a little bit in that environment, I mean, wouldn't it be pretty much like deep sleep? I mean, in the dream state, your mind is twirling, but with enough ketamine, enough deprivation of sensory input,
I would think someone might go to sleep to deal with heightened encounters with irrational projection rather than, you know, try to tough it out.
That's the only way to go. Because, I mean, we're expecting, you know, the waking brain, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Is like thriving on input, you know.
Yeah.
That might happen, yeah. But people say it's like very uncomfortable. So, I mean,
what's very uncomfortable?
Going in that anechoic chamber.
Oh.
So it's like they're inclined to believe that you wouldn't be, like, from the outset, like, you know, able to be comfortable enough to sleep. But maybe some people, just as a defense mechanism,
might just, like, floating around would be like...
Well, the anechoic chamber is not the isolation tank, but the anechoic chamber is just like the...
Oh, an echo chamber, is that what you said?
Anechoic. Yes.
The opposite of an echo.
That's the minus 75 dB.
Yeah, that's like the no sound.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be like...
That's where you say something and it's like reversed. I don't know.
Yeah,
I chilled Paul. Turn me on, dead man. Turn me on, dead man.
But everybody thinks that, like, in the, you know, comment section. Like, I can do that. I would just go to sleep out. And then, like, the people that have been there say it's not really like that. It has a strange effect. I mean... I'm sure there's probably somebody who's immune to it, but I don't think they have it.
The Green Lantern, you know.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Well, that's what you're, I mean,
people of his ilk.
I'm like, what if you put the Buddha in there? What would it be like for him?
Yeah, I don't know. He'd probably be shouting
out.
45 minutes, let me out of here!
Something counterintuitive to that. That whole endeavor.
Let me out of here! The teachings were a lie! Let me out!
A few unintentional times that
this, came in there.
This body and this mind were at peace, very still, is when consciousness could just kind of zip out for a little trip, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't in any kind of chamber. It wasn't even thinking, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
It was just saying, I don't know if you could say something. I'm so cool, I don't even have to pull on, I don't know if there is some sort of thread that says, well, this is our inhabited location for now.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go on a trip. Well, what's the way back, right? And that thread isn't going, yank, yank, yank. It's basically going, all right, yeah, I'm cool. Got it. It's like...
No fear of losing the tether.
But it neutralizes, seems to neutralize pretty much all these endeavors of trying to be sensory or unsensory or qualify this or unqualify that. Again, there wasn't a goal to have that happen. It was just like, oh, literally, there's nothing to it. When I hear you say that, that's where my mind goes in the sense of, you know, you could put a whole bunch of stuff up on the wall and it's still, I don't know if you play with time, fast forward 1,000 years, it's just dirt. It's nothing. So.
Yeah, I mean, we're all absolutely, you know, welcome to sense and articulate whatever, you know, insight or body of metaphor may appear to us from moment to moment, contrasted with, you know, prior experience or yogic endeavor. And
see, that didn't come from any kind of endeavor. I'm speaking about it as if it's something stored in my thing, you know?
Right.
Wherever.
Right. Right.
Stored in the thing. Yeah. Storage.
That's right. Yeah. It's just, you know, just kind of a little data dump. That's fine.
But it does sort of come into presence and filter in a way. Some things that I'm experiencing right now in this room.
Yeah.
As I'm listening or as I'm speaking.
Right.
Yeah. Chop wood, carry water. And, you know, well, another just little visit. When I was really physically exhausted, I mean really just completely, totally physically exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
My body
that way after breakfast.
Went into a deep, deep, deep rest, you know.
Yeah.
And then something woke up and said, oh, shit, I can't move.
Wow.
And said paralyzed sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And then the things I could experience in that state were more than weird.
Oh.
And I said, oh, I wonder what these deep trance people do. I guess that's what it is in a way. But it was like a little freaky that you couldn't move your body at all. And you're aware of it. It's like, holy shit.
Some of the demons
come
to get you.
Were there any spirits?
Oh, you know what? No, you know what I do? I say, yeah, I don't say come on. I basically, at the time, I remember I was reading something and said, Jesus, in the name of Jesus Christ, be on your way. I can't help you here.
Demons with forks and knives.
Go to the light. I'm just an ordinary Joe. You know, I nothing here for you. But on the other hand, as I was listening to you and your experience, if all these demons want to get in, there must be something absolutely fascinating about you. I'd explore that. Why would you be that interesting to all these demons? You know?
Yeah, I mean, that was some food, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, wow.
Because I scream.
They like to hear. They love the sound of screaming.
They like a response, right? Mm-hmm.
They love the sound of screaming.
Poke him here, you'll get a really cool response. Yeah, anymore, I just go, come on in. What do you got?
The, you know, ongoing, let's say, appreciation of presence as primacy and accompanying symbology. One's sense of identity biological and physical and in all the ways that, you know, identity can assert itself. There's an appreciation, you know, of all of this, let's call it quality of experience, appearing or occurring on tap with no effort, you know, free lunch. But even with all of this, let's call it potency, potential, and expressiveness occurring or felt, none of it has any implication. None of it is strong enough, you could say, to have you believe that anything is actually happening, or that you're even on the receiving end of, well, to be weird about it, consciousness itself. Like, wouldn't it be fun, just for fun, to catch wind of a present, not future, not past, but present quality of, call it being, which is not correct, of course, that is not encumbered by consciousness?
Consciousness is too strong, right? I mean, it's like it's grasping. I mean,
hard to say. No one really knows what it is. I wouldn't dare to. But it doesn't stop us from, you know, using the word to imply whatever we believe it is that's being felt. And whether whatever it is that's being felt could possibly be defining or have something in store for you. So, you know, inwardly, not that there's an inward as contrasted with an outward, one could say presently, without the boundary field of inwardly or outwardly, presently, that there's just no implication. So the primacy, not that there is one, because even that's, you know, kind of a sloppy suggestibility. Doesn't find anything at all. And yet everything that is possible to be found hasn't gone anywhere. There's absolutely nothing to process. And so there's no refusal of anything or celebration of anything. There's just nothing to process. Not the slightest hint of contrast involves you in, right, being the purveyor, progenitor, receiver, accomplisher, doer or not doer of anything at all. So nothing's changed. You know, were there a world, and that's, you know, no one's quite sure, but were there one, you could return to it with, you know, without losing your way. You wouldn't have to go all the way to Oz and kill a witch just to get home to Kansas.
You just have to start noticing.
Yeah. So it's kind of, I mean, it's fun, I feel, and a little strange, for sure, that all of this activity that occurs, you know, in the name of spiritual discovery is like, wait a second. To discover with no particular skills, and certainly not having earned anything, that this has no implication at all. And you don't have to process that in order for it to be true. And the effortless relinquishment of processing anything at all is, it's not the result of anything. Even the most subtle of intimacies kind of suggests or requires something to be intimate with. But no, you can't even find something that you would hold out as being intimate with.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a pervasive intimacy, if that has any meaning anymore.
It doesn't. It's nice leading up to the moat, but once the crocodile has you by the ankle, no.
Consciousness is the term that keeps messing with me, and it seems that consciousness, I mean, as soon as you start to describe it, it suddenly becomes something.
This is it. You see, the add objects and stir.
Yeah.
Right? Liberation is a kind of a dehydration.
Yeah.
Yeah? And, you know, add objects and stir is consciousness.
Yeah. So it gives little sponges, you add water and they turn into these snakes.
Yeah, that's right. Objectless, call it reality if you want. Sure, why not? Objectless reality, which turns out to be exactly this, with all of the extinction trauma that we're enjoying as a species, you know, kumbaya, is nothing at all. If you were fond of being an activist, let's say, to do your part, your fair share. For fun, I could be kind of, you know, cocky about it. What else can I be? And it would be just this. Pull the plug on consciousness having any implication at all, and just to be political about it, you've out-dreamt the Illuminati. Not that that needs to be a particular goal.
I was just going to say, it sort of almost hints at implying that it's better than being involved.
Yes, yes. Well, I'll let you, right? Leave that up to each unit. Each bio unit can cope with their own curious karma to see where whatever life is or isn't takes them. Yeah. And it's not to, imply or subsume, right, anything. The discovery of objectless reality, which is yourself, beyond even intimacy. Well, I'll leave it up to that to inform you, if there were you, as it will. I mean, you know, my work's done here.
Like a Pop-Tart, you come out of it, you pop up out of the toaster.
Sure. I think it's kind of interesting to be, you know, let's say interested, capable, mature enough, gifted in a way to put the imagination of your life down, to give up even a short time at a meeting like this one, the presumption that you need to do anything about anything at all to acquire a more sanguine relationship with the myth of being yourself. You don't have to heal. You don't have to be given any assurances that the demons won't find you and tear you apart or force you to stay in a minus 75 decibel chamber longer than you can or anything like that. The revelation or an encounter with unearned, effortless silence of metaphor is sufficiently formidable. To find that despite what your neighbors and employer and family might say, consciousness is not binding upon you.
It's funny, it's only seen in very, very traditional ways generally. I mean, what we're talking about, it feels to me, it may be a tradition, but it's a very thin tradition, you know?
Oh, it's thin.
You know, because, you know, lack of consciousness, there's all these ways to talk about consciousness.
That's what consciousness would have you believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah.
And I can see where this notion of super consciousness, but you know, is
another trick,
can be seen as like the enlightened experience.
No, it's not the case.
And it's like the opposite.
No, absolutely.
Another thing to be enamored by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah. That's. You see, when you when certain, let's call them, enlightened salespersons say curious and endearing things about their own condition or about the so-called nature of the absolute and, you know, whip their audience into an accomplishment frenzy, you know, an acquisition frenzy. It's not such a good idea. It happens all too frequently. But it's like, no. Like Nirsagadatta, just put your hands down. Put them down. Relax. You don't have to get all wild-eyed about the absolute. It gives people the wrong impression.
That's right. Then you'd have to fill a stadium the next time. I have to go eat.
Oh, you must go eat
before.
Well, we knew that.
My night duty.
Stomach fog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, see you, folks. Thanks for coming.
Yep.
How's your attendance on Tuesday? People are getting accustomed to the change.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Good energy.
It worked out then.
Here, yeah. And
yeah.
Since I lost my dance partner, it's going to be every Tuesday now. Instead of.
Oh.
You're going to miss Naho next week.
Naho? Oh, isn't that through Fusing?
That's Zoom.
Zooming, yeah.
What day is that?
That's so Tuesday.
Oh, it's a Tuesday, yeah.
This coming Tuesday at.
Well, no, actually, I won't miss it because it's 2nd, 4th, and 5th. What is it?
Oh.
Oh, that's the first Tuesday.
If it's the first, I won't miss it because I haven't
kicked
into full time.
Well, then you won't miss it.
Okay. That is curious. So I might tune in. Is there like a code or something?
There's a code.
That's in the email.
Yeah.
Or it's on the website.
Yeah.
Are you a scalper? You have $50, you'll sell me the code.
All right. She's a sneaky one.
$50. It's a big event.
It's a big event. Don't think you're getting into this shit for 50.
500.
I paid 50. You're gonna pay more than 50.
Especially
last minute. That's right. All righty. See you around. Love to Lisa.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh. Yeah, she could use some. I can't say positive energy. She threw up when I was too positive. So.
She likes you that much. That's kind of like South Park.
That's how I feel.
So you see her regularly?
Every night. She wants someone there at night because she gets anxious.
Oh.
And overall,
the demons will come.
Or the demons will come.
I know, it's not my demons.
Dave the Demon Slayer.
Well, good.
I am too, I think.
You'll let us know. Right. After the funeral.
All right. Oh.
I didn't cut that one. Just,
yeah, cut that one out.
Jesus.
Go back. Edit.
She's going to be fine. Stop.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
I was just
going to
say, we could meet at Lisa sometime.
We should.
I don't know what her energy level is like these days. I have no idea.
It's grumpy.
Yeah.
She came one time. She came like last week.
That's an omen.
I think it was a lot to go with Alpha.
Yeah. You can see why, you know, some kind of a sage might refer to this as a stillness or silence or, you know, use some other kind of fancy Sanskritish kind of metaphors. But, nah. Because even stillness and silence is so, it's just too loaded with implication. And this is has no implication. And this is not the contrast of anything. It's not the opposite of anything. It's kind of fun to watch your ones. What did we call them earlier? You know, acquisition tools go to complete failure. But instead of delivering some kind of a frustration, an impenetrable frustration, no. Your acquisition tools go to absolute failure and, oh my, there's this.
Where your acquisition skills may proceed normal, right?
Well, sure.
No. I don't know if that would, I don't know what you'd call that, if that would be sort of more, almost just to grasp at a word as a witness type of a thing.
Well, it's an interesting word to use. Let's say we, just through serendipitous stumbling about, discover, call it a quality of silence that's just not processing. Consciousness is not processing itself at all. Would you say that you're witnessing?
Not necessarily. No, I would say probably. I would not use that.
Animals?
Maybe.
Mouse in the house?
The demons.
Demons are coming.
God.
My bad.
You're
right
bad,
here.
Yeah.
He's right here.
Yeah, yeah. Take him. Yeah.
Over here.
Right here. Guy in the hoodie.
Bright shades.
Bright colors.
But there's also a stupor, you could say there's a stupor, but that I wouldn't call that. I mean, that's just a stupor. You know, that's a lack of consciousness, but that's not anything special.
Yeah.
You could be in a stupor all day long.
We are.
If you're
that's
drinking
my thing.
Up.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
That's what we do, yeah. We're stupefied.
But, I mean, you can slow down that brain processing to pretty low, but I don't think there's anything too special about that. Not that I don't know, special is a good word.
Yeah, right.
I don't think that's something I would want to aspire to or go in the direction.
Okay.
Stupefaction.
Right.
But we can use sort of the language in a way, you know, the vacuity, you know.
Uh-huh.
Can have a place. Possibly, without there being, it's like there's this element that we haven't described. There's some elephant in the room that we haven't looked at, uh-huh. you know, and we can't really talk about, seemingly, you know, that's something that's not consciousness, but something that separates this thing that we're dancing around with stupefaction.
It can. Yeah. It can. And, you know, not to contrast that, not that it means to be contrasted. You know, objectless lucidity. Which I wouldn't, doesn't feel as we're playing with it, is being stupefied.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
But it's a hard one to, you can't really pin it down in language in any way.
How can you? It's not processing, nor is it processable.
Bad. I kind of like that. Objectless lucidity. Is that what you said?
I have. Maybe even recently.
Play the tape back.
Yeah. Well, this is part of the, you know, the curious nature of taking this journey is, you know, not just to dance around a bunch of metaphors and or repeat what, you know, other accomplished, you know, persons have said. It's not a study group in that way, you know. I mean, the real bang for the buck is your own encounter with your own objectless lucidity, complete and effortless relaxation from the compulsion to process anything appearing, so that you know consciousness is not agitated. And quite effortlessly, there's no more, what about this, or what about that? I mean, it's, you know, it's so... I don't know. It's so whatever it is that I can't even find, you know, something that says, oh... Should I be like this all the time, or will I lose my job, or can I communicate this? No. No. I mean, it's such a naked discovery. I mean, the last thing you'd want to do is, you know, put up a website and say, I had a spiritual, you know, experience, I'm enlightened now, and you know, you should talk to me in exchange for money. You know,
that'd be kind of refreshing to see something like that. Because it's usually kind of,
yeah,
you know, curvy, yeah, and hidden.
Well,
I'm here to make money.
Yeah.
Like, damn, that guy knows the truth. He's honest.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, you say that, and then I'm like, oh, I see. I've been like, instead of chopping everything up into individual objects, I've just been taking the whole thing as like one big object, and then like, I don't know, maneuvering, and I'm like, all right, so like that's gone. And it's like,
yeah.
Oh, but that's just like another belief or way of looking at things, and it's just like, and I'm just like, no.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know what I was trying to say there.
Yeah. Well, it's fun because, you know, there's always chum.
Chum?
You're the shark.
Yeah,
and
I'm like,
you're swimming in
like,
chum-infested waters.
Yeah.
Right? And so you can get excited by... Sorry. You can get excited by there being, you know...
Did you just like that camera?
Yeah, it's sparky.
I got close, you know.
In the spirits.
Do it again.
Thank you.
Come on, sparky.
Do it again.
Yeah. He's like the Human Torch. This is really a Fantastic Four workshop. and we're all here to discover what we can. I'm cold. You seem like that stretchy guy.
Yeah, all right, I'll take it.
You're the stretchy guy. Yeah.
See, when you try.
So if Nofar then is the weather girl, then Francine must be the rock. The thing.
She's a giant boulder, yeah. So
yeah, she's a giant boulder.
That's true, actually.
Disguised as a small person with a pit bull.
That's so true.
This is a Fantastic Four workshop. It's like a 12-step meeting for Fantastic Four.
See you all.
All right, see you around. Don't try this at home.
Huh. Invisible?
Yeah, I don't think she was blind.
No, the rock. Oh, the rock? Yeah.
Ben Grimm.
He ended up with the blind girl because he was so ugly.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, you're
That's
right.
That's why she liked to feel him. Yeah. But she could, if, you know, anyone that could see him was like, Jesus Christ.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she liked to go hiking on his body. So you're the shark, and you're in chum-infested waters. So you'll get excited by, you know, all the aromas and everything there is to nibble on.
And I'm like, oh, look, there goes another belief. I'm like, this is so wonderful. Wait, what am I doing? Like, this is like that.
Yeah. Yes. And all of that's perfectly fine, no matter what the Buddha or anyone else has to say about it. Really, you're not going to tango successfully with consciousness, because consciousness is consuming. You don't ever outwit consciousness. Once you're in it, I mean, that's it. You're in. So we're playing around with, and of course this is, you know, metaphoric, because I wouldn't want to suggest that something is true or deliverable or even repeatable. That wouldn't be any fun. Just by suggesting that, wow, yeah, consciousness, that's like fucking everything, man. Yeah, right. Untangle. Yeah. And you can. You can discover that you are absolutely unencumbered and untangled with consciousness as, you know, an insistence of perturbation. And you're not processing anymore. Your intelligence is objectless. Call it lucid. Beyond intimate. Some might say, oh, but it looks like the world is appearing in you. No, it's not. No, that's bullshit. Because this, it doesn't have any poetry. It doesn't have any relationship with a world, whether the world is external to you or whether it's appearing in you. That just sounds like, you know, more Rumi.
Does sometimes feel like I get like sucked into the world, like
yeah, it, you know, like Jodie Foster going through the wormhole, but it's much faster than that. You know, that was like a kind of a poetic expression, which was protracted, because she, you know, got into a bubble and everything was shaking. And I'm okay to go. And everything's starting to become, you know, glass-like and disappear. And finally they drop her and she goes on an 18-hour journey through a bunch of fucking wormholes to meet someone that kind of looks like her dad. And they have a nice conversation on an azure beach somewhere, God knows where. And she comes back and for everyone else on the ground, she just fell straight into the water. Right? And for her, it was like, no, that didn't happen. No, a lot happened. But there was no record of it. So the world, you know, you could say grabs you instantaneously and asserts itself through the miracle of processing, through the miracle of consciousness taking itself to be manifest or express. But it's not. You don't have a thing to say about it. And it sure as fuck isn't mindfulness. Ah, one viewer. Hello, viewer.
This is Suzanne.
I don't know. Thanks for joining us. We're going to turn off the broadcast now. I hope you enjoyed it.